Hey everyone, this is Tom. Welcome to episode 15 of The Great Divide. This is part two of our ongoing discussion about the Seer album, part two of three to be exact. And we are just going to jump right in where we left off last time, talking about the song, The Teacher. So I hope you enjoy it.
The Teacher, that track on the album, why did you write that?
I don't know, asking somebody why they write something is like, or asking a writer why they write something is a bit like asking them why they go to the toilet or why they eat food, you know? it's just, writing has become a part of me.
Do you have to write every day?
Sometimes, yeah. If I'm in that frame of mind, I do. Sometimes not. I prefer to do it from inspiration rather than sit down and slog my guts out and do it.
Was it written for anyone?
Not in particular, no. As I say, it was based just on a mood sort of thing that seemed to tie in quite well with the underlying feeling of learning from a past and just a certain quest for knowledge and finding out and understanding.
History.
Okay, so The Teacher, we've got this, which was the second single off of this album. And, you know, we're talking about singles, and I got to say, much as I didn't think The Seer would have made a good single, I think this is a very poor choice as a single. Saying that, I absolutely love this song. I think it's a great song, but I think it's a bad single choice. There's just nothing about this song to me that screams radio play. But that being said, I think this is a great song. Fits in perfectly with the theme of the album and really fits in perfectly as a almost a little sequel in a sense to The Seer. Maybe almost too much, because it's almost like this is the song about the male seer. The character that Stewart is singing about in this song seems almost like a prophet as well, just like the Kate Bush character of the preceding song. This is another great example, kind of like what I said about Look Away. This is another great example of a song that sounded fresh and different and new from anything we'd really heard from Big Country before, but it was still clearly Big Country. And what I mean by that specifically is, like, for example, the guitar lines that begin the song. It almost sounds like something you would hear in the theme of a Wild West type of movie. Whenever I hear that,
yeah, it reminds me of Rawhide.
Yes, it does. I was thinking Bonanza, which was another American show, but Rawhide definitely. It's got that Old West type of feel, and you never really heard Big Country play that before, but it worked for me.
Yeah, in some ways, this foreshadows a lot of the country / Nashvillean inspirations that came later.
It kind of does. And, you know, for this song, another example of what I think is the standout on this album, and I think was really needed for this album, as a breath of fresh air from Steeltown. And that's these clean guitars, these beautiful clean guitars that go throughout this album. And even though they're clean and they're pristine sounding, they still have an edge to it. I mean, to me, this song still has an edge, even though it's musically, I think it's a gorgeous song. You know, when I listen to this, I often talk about Steeltown. I always call it a guitar symphony because there are so many layers of guitars, and to me, each one works, even though maybe that was by accident. I don't know, but I know the band themselves even kind of distanced themselves from the way that album sounds. But to me, it's like a masterpiece of guitar symphony. Well, I hear a lot of that on The Teacher. I mean, when you listen to this song in headphones, and when you especially listen to one of the 12-inch mixes of this song, which I can't remember which one it was, maybe the mystery mix.
Oh, God.
if it's the one I'm talking about, to me, it's one of the best Big Country 12-inch mixes around, because you can almost hear every little part they bring in one at a time, and you can really get a feel for the guitars that went into this song. I mean, at times it almost sounds like violins playing in the background, and just the way that it's put together. This is another song that, again, lyrically very similar to The Seer, so you could maybe make a complaint about it from that standpoint. I don't have a problem with that, really. For me, the chorus is just incredibly catchy. I don't know what it is about it. Again, I know that kind of contradicts what I said about it being a single, but it's not single catchy, but there's just something I love about cranking the song up and singing along to the all of history part, especially, you know, all of history and, you know, that whole chorus. It's just something really great about, for me, the way that chorus goes and the harmonies that Stewart is singing there. I just think this is another great song on this album. I mean, this is one of the standout tracks for me. It's one of my favorite songs on the album, but I definitely would not have chosen it as a single.
On that point, we do agree. This album really is a mix so far. It starts with a lightweight pop rock song, and then you have this heavily mythical and folk-inspired tune, and now we have this moody, atmospheric song. And like we mentioned, the rawhide guitar thing. It's certainly new on a big country album.
Yeah.
It's a likable song. I would not call it a stellar song. It's sort of, for me, in what I call no man's land in the album. Not necessarily a bad place to be. I think this album has a bunch of tracks that are fantastic, a bunch of tracks that are good, and some tracks that are throwaway compared to what they should have been. So this is in the middle group, and I'm thinking as I hear you speak about how this is a continuation of The Seer. I really don't see that. I really don't know how it could be. I know a lot of people
kind of like you've got kind of like a prophet guy who's foretelling the future and the mysteries of the world and this type of thing. So it just
but this is a man and a woman that sits and chats or whatever during the night. There's no prophet. Well,
who? In the teacher?
In the teacher. It's clearly a man singing the song.
And have you seen the video, though? Have you seen the video?
The video makes no sense. Forget the video. The video is... don't look for the video to explain the song. I actually have some quotes from Stewart about what this song is about, which is very interesting and somewhat disappointing, to be honest. Initially, he said, he said something about the quest for spiritual enlightenment on the Hold the Heart interview. But later on, he went much more hands-on. And I have this quote. This is from Sounds in May 1990, where he said, "I don't know where the song came from. I just wanted to write a weird song about a guy who sat up all night stoned, thinking he had a thinking he had a great idea when he actually didn't." And he followed up with an interview in Melody Maker just a week later, a song about getting stoned and pretending you discovered the meaning of life. So, and there are some allusions to this, especially the opening line, "We talked and smoked all through the night."
Right, right.
And then there's nothing more about that until the end of the second verse, where he says, "You wove a tale in silken curls and blew the mist in silver swirls." So that's, again, could be about smoking. I never thought of it that way until I read those quotes much, much later. To me, this song is a filthy one. It's about sex.
And, really?
It's about sex. This song is chock full of sexual innuendo.
You're insane.
It's
explain to me this.
I will break it down for you because I know you need the teaspoon feeding of what it is. Look, we have this young guy and we have an experienced woman. When I say experience, that can be in any sense, whether it's spiritual enlightenment, and this comes out in the lyrics. They stay up all night, that much is clear, and she enlightens him in a subject matter of which he has no prior knowledge, which means he's a virgin, and she is the teacher. So it really isn't a stretch. We talked and smoked all through the night. So he's not going to say, we made love all through the night. It's hinted at. So if people want to make it philosophical or something in that vein, it works very well. Well played, Stuart. And he continues, you led me for I had no sight. That's the line when you understand he has no experience. He's a virgin. And it goes on, till bird song broke the morning light. Oh, yeah, they were busy all night, all right. And he was weak with strange delight. No, of course, why wouldn't he be? He's weak, exhausted after the all-night session. And we don't need to explain the strange delight. Right? Everybody has strange delight. And I'm sure he had a smile on his face, too.
And yet he wanted this woman to explain to him the bond between the land and sea and all of history.
I'll get to that. You know, teacher, right. Will you show to me the bond between the land and sea? What happens between the land and the sea? We have waves crashing up on the shore. We all know what that can be an allegory for. So I am new to mystery. I want everything laid out for me. Basically, yeah, he's saying, show me. You know.
Oh, the word laid. He used the word laid. You're exactly right.
It's cleverly hinted at, and it can mean anything. If you want it to mean spiritual enlightenment, it works perfectly. But it's almost too easy to pick on, but you get the picture. So,
I do, but I don't see it. I mean, you don't want to see it.
Once you
if he would have said it, I would agree. But I mean, you definitely twisted them to fit your version of the song.
No, but
there's nothing from Stuart that suggests this is about sex.
No, there isn't, and in fact, he has quenched both of our interpretations. It's not about some spiritual enlightenment. It's not about sex. It's about getting stoned and thinking you discovered the secret of life. So, there you go.
I wouldn't go by what he said in that interview as explaining the song. I would go by the song itself. I would go secondary by the video. And I know that they don't write the video and create the video necessarily, but they certainly approve of them.
What we try and do is go to various directors that have been suggested to us with a copy of lyrics and try and explain to them the basic idea for the song. And then they usually come back with a storyboard or something like that, and we pick the one that looks like it's at least bears some relevance to the material and the actual lyrics.
So, I mean, when I look at the video, I'm not thinking, oh, this is what he meant. But clearly, that's what the song is about if you go by the video. I mean, you've got a guy who's this strange person who's coming in. He's got some sort of magical powers, and he's teaching Stuart about this or that. Again, I'm not using the video to shape the song itself. But
you
to me, that's – to me, how could you not be serious? I mean, So I'm supposed to go by your interpretation versus an official band video and Stuart and one comment that Stuart said about the song is about getting stoned.
It's actually two comments.
Okay,
one in sounds, one in the melody maker. So he said it on several occasions. That's what it's about. And if you look
Stuart
at the lyrics,
Stuart always said things like that in interviews that weren't necessarily as deeply rooted as he wanted to get things across.
At least I'm open to his meaning. You're in denial. You're in complete denial.
I just know that he would not sit around writing a song that was just about getting stoned. Even though he said that in the interview, I refuse to believe that. I don't believe that's true.
Oh, come on.
No, and I definitely don't subscribe to your interpretation.
The video really is just a video. It's someone driving and you can see the road flashing by, and it doesn't relate to either interpretation. That's just some visuals.
It doesn't upset you that somebody else puts a visual interpretation on your particular song?
Not if it's a visual interpretation that I see that has some vague relation to things that are going on in the song. I think if somebody started turning up with teams of leggy blondes and hot rods, we'd have something to say about it. Not that there's anything wrong with leggy blondes and hot rods, just it's not one of my favourite songs, sometimes.
As long as the leggy blondes are women.
For me, when you take these lyrics in context with the album, when you take the lyrics in context with what Stuart has said many times was the focus of the album and the emotions that he wanted to, you know, the album to convey, I think to look at it as a spiritual enlightenment type of song certainly makes the most sense.
The thing about spiritual enlightenment is very natural to reach for any big country fan, because that's the kind of thing he would write about. And it becomes almost shocking to discover that it might, in fact, be something much more down to earth and maybe not so poetic or deep after all. And before I knew about this smoking dope stuff, I blew the mist in Silver Swirl. that one almost made me blush. but I've since recounted a bit, so I'm saying the sex thing sort of tongue in cheek, but that was what I thought about it. I did not necessarily go immediately for the spiritual enlightenment thing. Okay. So to talk about the song itself as well, it is likable. It certainly expands the musical palette of Big Country. It is the first song where we got hints of the country-ish inspiration that would become much more prevalent in later years. But it's definitely a Big Country song. So, yeah, an interesting one. Interesting lyrics, a very new type of song for Big Country, without really departing from their sound. Sounds like them, but they're playing around a bit.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, it's not a single choice at all. I mean, if they released...
kind of shocking, really, that they released this as a single.
Yeah, very shocking. And if this could have been a single, there's no defending not putting out The Seer. It's neither better or worse. It's if The Teacher can be a single, The Seer can be a single in my mind.
Well, it's shorter. That's probably why. I mean, it gets back to that.
I'm sure
it's shorter as it is. It didn't need any editing, and I don't know what was going through their heads thinking this is going to be a single, but
maybe they were smoking too.
Yeah, maybe they were.
Maybe they got some from Kate Bush. Okay, so how would you rank it?
The Teacher, I have it number 5.
All right. I also have it at number 5.
Ah, interesting.
This is another number from a new record. And this one is quite pastoral and self-searching. Try and speak again here. Self-searching and intent. And what? It's called I Walk the Hill.
I Walk the Hill. You want to start on this one?
Yeah, I almost don't know what to make of this song. I regard it as the second song so far of 3 Big Country-ish pop rock songs on the album. No prizes for guessing the other ones, really. And this, I think, is clearly the best of those 3. On one hand, it's very nicely executed. It has all the trademarks. The title of the song brings images of big landscapes again, always a plus. And it pushes a lot of the right buttons, but there definitely is an element of style over substance with this song. Okay, scratch that. It's not just an element. It's totally style over substance. But I like the style. That's what I can say about it. But if you start picking on it, and let's start with the lyrical content, it feels a bit like scat lyrics, which means stuff that is just sung on the spur of the moment to sort of fill the gap as the words occur in Stuart's mind. It may not be far from the truth. What do I know? And I don't actually remember the source. Let me know if you do. But I read somewhere that the band said... that this is a song they just started jamming, trying to play a typical Big Country song.
So well, actually, I have the actual quote here in front of me. Let me just read that real quick, just to set you up, because this comes from that article I mentioned before with Bruce, and he says, "This started off as a parody of ourselves. We were sitting thinking to ourselves, let's do a parody of Fields of Fire or something like that. So we just started playing these guitars on a typically Big Country style with a drum beat and Tony playing typically cod work bass type stuff. And it actually ended up sounding quite good. We decided to use it. So what started out as a joke, in a way, turned out to be really good."
Yeah, exactly. And out of that, I Walk the Hill was born. So this is what happens when the band tries to sound like themselves just for fun. And, I kind of think we shouldn't analyze the lyrics too much. This is another one that isn't necessarily very deep. But the words go well together, and they do create imagery of Highlands, Scottish things, those kind of things. And I don't know if it's just me, but I have a feeling that this song could have done better as a single, maybe ironically, than both One Great Thing, The Teacher, and Hold the Heart. So obviously this is in hindsight. I know how well those other singles did, but still, I always had that feeling when I first heard the album that, of course this is going to be the next one after Look Away. But right. For some reason that just didn't happen. So, we've had so much to say about each song on the album so far. I don't have too much to say about this. On a personal level, this song is clearly not a Big Country classic, but it's a decent album track, and I think we used the word good filler before, and Never has that tag fitted better on a song than right here. And that's exactly what this one is. It's a good album track, but definitely not a standout. Obviously, it works on some level. But a part of what I think is a shame is that the previous two albums, pretty much every song was a standout. And here we got an album where that wasn't the case anymore. So I'm not going to hold any ill feelings towards I Walk the Hill, but it sort of fits the bill in being an album that was somewhat lesser. Every song wasn't a standout. There were some songs that were just quite okay. So this song is part of explaining why I hold this year to a much lesser esteem than the first two. So that's I Walk the Hill. I Walk That Hill.
Yeah, I agree with you a lot on this song. I think I like it a little bit more than you do, but there's no doubt this is a filler type song, and yeah, the good filler, I would say, is definitely an apt phrase here. And you know, the fact that it started out as a parody, I mean, as them trying to do something that's in a big country, you almost can't escape the fact that it's going to turn into what it turned into, which is a good song. I like the song, I enjoy it, but yeah, there's something that's not quite there. And on this album, I think 8 of the songs I hold in incredibly high regard, and then there are 2 that are slightly lower. This is one of the 2, obviously. And I really still like the song. There's a lot of great stuff in it. There's great bass playing in it again. In fact, listening to it again, I noticed that there's even harmony-based parts where Tony is harmonizing with himself in the breakdown of this song. I could be wrong, but I think this might be the first shah that we get in the album and from Stewart. And there may be one in the teacher, too, but I'm not sure. But this song was really needed at this point in the album. The album, I think, is paced very well so far. We've got, you know, the Look Away. We've got the mysterious kind of Seer, and then an equally mysterious type of song with the teacher. And we really needed something to kind of change the direction a little bit. And I think that's what this was. I mean, this is a very straightforward rock, big country rock song. And
I'll agree, we needed this style at this point in the album.
Right.
If not this song.
But maybe not this song, yeah. You know, the good things that I will say do stand out. I mean, I agree about the lyrics. There are some things that are a little too, a little bordering on cliche for Stewart, a little bit less from what his high standards usually are, like stand up, hold my hand, you know, but then there are some great lines in it. And I've often wondered what he actually means by I Walk the Hill and what he's talking about. I mean, my favorite lines in the song are, I'm not as strong as I am told. It feels too long since I was bold, but you can lie in sheets of gold if I walk the hill. Touch me and I understand. We only write our names in sand. I could stand where legends stand if I walk the hill. And later in the song, he changes the you to we, and he changes the I to we. So it's we can lie in sheets of gold, and we could stand where legends stand. I wonder if he's talking about, like, his career there. I don't know. Like, you know, I'm not that strong. This is a tough life, but, you know, it's a way I'm going to make money for us. And the whole idea of we write our names in sand, but I could stand where legends stand if I walk the hill. If I keep writing great songs, they will endure and people will always remember them. And I don't know, maybe that's stretching it, and maybe that's a little bit too much of an aloof or type of thing that Stewart maybe wouldn't even say. I could be totally off base, but that's one thing that struck me. The one thing that I'll say about this song live that always bothered me, though, I think they got it right on the studio version, where at the end, and this is going to seem like a trivial thing, but to me it's a relatively big thing. But at the end, Stewart says, stand up, hold my hand. And then he repeats, stand up, hold my hand. And that's how the song ends. I love that. But for some reason live, and we'll talk more about changing lyrics on this album when we talk about I Lead On. But for some reason live, they would say, stand up, hold my hand. Stand here close to me. And they would end it that way. And for some reason, on a poetic basis, I always thought it worked much better to have that last line repeat, stand up, hold my hand, stand up, hold my hand. And I was always kind of disappointed when they played that song live and they ended it that way. So there's my little Big Country Minutia moment.
Yeah, and my disappointment was that they actually played it live.
Yeah, okay. There could have been better choices, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, if they had chosen it as a single, which maybe they should have in some ways, it reeks of singleness, but they didn't. So no license to play it. Take it back. You're out. Okay, so how do you rank it? Number 9, right?
You're probably right, but let me just make sure. Yes, number 9.
Okay, I have your beat. It's number 8.
Oh, okay.
Now, Stuart, you might as well give the proper pronunciation. What exactly is that track called?
That track's called Eilidh Dun.
Oh, thanks very much.
Thank you. A long time ago, when I was a dad... Wait a minute, can everyone understand my accent? That's cool, because it's the only one I've got. Oh, God, I forgot again. That's twice. I've got two editions I've done now. A long time ago, when I was a daft boy, I read a poem by a man called Hugh McDermott, and the poem was called A Drunk Man Looks at the Thistle, which was quite apt, and it inspired me to write this song. And the song is actually about knowing who you are and what you're about, and it's called Eilidh Dun.
Okay, Eilidh Dun. I'm glad this worked out for me to speak about, because this song is just everything that is genius about Big Country to me. I mean, it's all encapsulated here. It's hard to even begin. But so I guess the best place to begin on this song is to talk just briefly about kind of what inspired it. And we talked a little bit about Hugh McDermott, this Scottish poet. And there was particularly a piece that he wrote called A Drunk Man Looks at the Thistle. And apparently, this is an incredibly lengthy poem. I mean, I think I read that it was like almost 3,000 lines. Yeah. And I started to try to read it, but it's written in Scots. And if that's the proper, it's written in literary Scots was the term that was used. And, you know, I can't make heads or tail of some of it. So it was too frustrating for me to read. But this guy was actually a communist, and he was a Scottish nationalist, as you mentioned. But what Stuart said was that, quoting Stuart, he said he had this idea for a Scotland that was modern and vital and outward looking, and not one that was just a sentimental picture of clans, whiskey, and bagpipes, a country that was part of the world. I don't think I can ever put things as well as he did. So Stuart was really reading his work a lot before he wrote The Seer, and obviously this kind of inspired him to write this song Eilidh Dun, which is what Stuart has said is kind of about a fictitious place that he created. And he created that name. Now, what's interesting, when I was doing a little research on this, is that there's a place in Scotland. Stuart wasn't quite as creative on this as maybe we would think, because there's a place in Scotland called Eildon Hills, and it's exactly the same spelling as Eilidh Dun, except without the E. So it's Eildon. And it's a place in Scotland that's considered to be a mystical place. It has kind of a lot of lore about it. And I'm reading from something from the Wikipedia page about this place, and it said beneath these hills, the lore is that someone named Thomas the Rhymer spent 7 years with the Fairy Queen, who rewarded him with the gift of prophecy, which of course ties into the whole seer thing. Here also it is said that King Arthur and his knights lie in enchanted sleep. And I always thought that was interesting, because I bet a lot of that work that Stuart did on Restless Natives only a year before might have inspired some of this too, because, you know, we've got the whole idea from Restless Natives of the heroes under the hills. Mm-hmm. And in fact, maybe that's even what that line was in reference to, was this Eildon Hills place. But I'm sure that must have influenced Stuart someday, because you've got the lines about the heroes under the hills asleep, and one day they'll come back from Restless Natives. And there's also talk that this place was like a place of ceremonial gatherings, according to scholars, back in ancient times. So The coincidence is just too much here to think that Stewart did not create the name Ailidon based on this place, Eildon Hills.
Excellent research. It almost duplicates mine to the letter, except except I have a second source for the naming of the song as well.
Cool.
It seemed that Stewart seemed to rework two different words and concepts. First, there is the Aildon, which, as you noted, is a historically notable spot and all of that. Second, there is a word, Eidolon, which suggests something which is seen but not quite real. Mm. And this word can connote something dark and ominous, as in Stewart's warning that reckoning is drawing near. But it can also mean an ideal, an imaginary thing which is yearned for by the writer. And by combining these two distinct words, Aildon and Eidolon, he gets Ailidon. This is just my theory. I'm not putting words in anyone's mouth, but that's what I get out of this. So Ailidon then becomes Stewart's own ideal place to call my own. So Ailidon is the imaginary place, but it still provides strength to see the future through, in the same way that MacDiarmid's protagonist in his poem reflects on the past and imagines a future Scotland.
Right.
And here Stewart elegantly imagined his own. So I think the song is both a tribute to and a comment on MacDiarmid's version.
That's great. That makes perfect sense. I'm sure that's probably true, without a doubt. And just musically, this song starts out with that beautiful Ebow part. And I don't think there's ever been a more beautiful big country intro, except, Be All Fall Together rivals it. I kind of put those two together as just the most beautiful big country intros of all time. You've got that great introduction, and then it kicks in. There's just so much to say about this song. I mean, we've got – I guess I'm not going to – I'll let you talk more about the music if you want. Talk about whatever you want, obviously. But the music is fantastic, basically. We'll just leave it at that.
We get it.
Yeah. But my favorite parts really are the lyrics. I think that Stewart – I don't know if he's ever written a better song lyrically. I just think every line of this song is – they make me tear up. They give me chills. Even today, I can never get tired of hearing this song. I mean, some of the standouts – So let me fill my children's hearts with heroes' tales and hope it starts. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. And then to me, the line that always just destroys me and the part of the song that always just destroys me is when we get to that final... It's just beyond belief to me how beautiful those lines are, and I just think this is a song that whatever shortcomings might be in some other songs on this album, I think the sheer amazing brilliance of this song lifts those up as well, and that's why I still really rate this album as being right alongside the first two because of a song like this.
Oh, that's incredible. Are you ready for me to break your heart now?
You won't break my heart, but go ahead.
I'll make a decent stab. No, it is a good song.
Go ahead, worm tongue.
Yeah, it is a good song, no doubt about it, but not a perfect song. And I have to admit I'm torn. And a part of me agrees with you, the song is gorgeous. Of course it is. It's a beautiful ballad, totally done in big country style. And in some ways, it's bliss in musical form. And where you sort of say, that is perfect, to me, therein lies some of the problem. We have spoken about it before, how a lot of their songs often have a dark side to them. And this song is totally devoid of that. And kind of like... if you go to the darkest of the dark, you have Living by Memory. And on the far opposite side, I think you have Ailidon. And that makes me realize that Big Country are really masters of the dark side. Come to the dark side of humanity, the struggles, the fights, songs of hope, songs of working and toiling ahead. And this is a song really beyond any of that. It's an everything's fantastic song. And Stuart sings, "A lead and I will be there." And to summarize,
I don't take it that way, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, to summarize, maybe I would have liked the song better if he had sung "A lead on." Maybe one day I'll perhaps be there if I'm lucky and work really hard and don't die. I mean, to me, this song is the equivalent to cherry pie.
Maybe he means when he does die.
maybe it's heaven. Who knows?
It could be.
But I really like cherry. It's one of my favorite flavors. But this song is the equivalent to cherry pie covered with cherry sauce, sprinkled with cherry flavored chocolate bits, and a cherry on top. it just becomes too much. And especially the intro, and where you rival this with All Fall Together. This song sort of, it gets too much towards the direction and sort of tilts over. Let me see how to put it. I think the Ebo works best when it signals something ominous, like the interest to Lost Patrol and a storm. I don't like it when they use it to sugarcoat things like here. And on songs like Everything I Need, for that matter, this becomes a very sugar sweet, sort of a beautiful melody. And this might sound horrible, but this to me becomes the Big Country version of panpipes. Good Lord, they made a jump from bagpipes to panpipes. And that just, it becomes too much. It becomes too sweet.
All
the layers of cherry. But apart, you know, I'm going to go back and forth. Apart from the diabetes-inducing Ebo intro, musically, I actually like the first part of the song. This is where the balladry is the strongest. I mean, the first verse.
So you have at least one synapse working.
I have lots of them, but I will go back and forth. The thing is, and maybe I should just give my summary of the song first. It's not that I don't like the song. I do like it. And there are so many good bits to like in this song and even love. But I feel it could have been a bit better. And it feels like they settled for this version. The song is brilliant. This take on the song isn't perfect. They could have pushed themselves. And what I'm going to do is more or less point out the areas where I feel an improvement could have lifted the song to the pinnacle where you hold it. Okay.
So, before you do that, let me just say one thing. I also think there's one area where this song could be improved, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but I just want to say before you say it that there is one area where I think this song could be improved. So go ahead.
Why don't you say it? We might not agree for all that matter.
Well, I think the only thing that could make this song better is more unrestrained drumming from Mark. There are parts in this song where I think the drums are great, but there are parts where I really wish he would just go off almost into more of like a, I don't want to say Keith Moon, but I'm thinking that, you know, like a more of a Keith Moon-ish type of flurry of fills. And I think it calls for a little bit more unrestrained drumming from Mark. There are times where he's just really playing a little bit too simplistically. And I know that they probably thought that's what the song called for, but there are parts where the song just cranks up emotionally, and I wish his drums would have come up a little bit with that. And that's the only part of the song that I would say could use a little bit of improvement, just a little bit more passionate drumming from Mark in places.
Okay, cool. That's not on my list. So.
Okay, good.
All right. Yeah, so I like the early part of the song where the balladry is the strongest, and the choruses are also good. They are powerful. They're fully realized. The "Alien and I Will Be There" part, and very nice. But there are some awkward transitions, and especially the transition from the to the first midsection. You're coming out of the initial balladry and see the future through, and then it goes into "I Choose This Place." And that transition doesn't sit that well. It becomes awkward and strangely staccato, if you will. It's almost like the band coming out of the first totally ballady section is caught between that beginning and the more powerful chorus section that comes later. So it never flowed to me. It always seemed a bit strange. But when you look later in the song, where they go into that exact same section after the second roundabout and he starts "Let Me Fill My Children's Heart," it feels a lot more natural, because they were not going into that section from a ballad intro. They came from a full band rock on middle part. So that transition flows much better. So it's really about how the song transitions into its various parts for me. That is part of where this song doesn't work. And I'm going to have a dig at the lyrics too, I'm afraid. But this is, I think, more due to personal experience and background. I grew up at a place where eagles regularly could be seen flying in the sky, and especially the hills were and still are abundant with deer. So when I hear the song starting up with eagles soaring in the clouds and deer in the hills, okay, this is everyday writing where I come from. It's almost cliched. So maybe I live in a lead, and maybe he's describing where I come from. So that's never impressed me for some reason. All these references to eagle and deer, like, that is bliss. That's not bliss. That's where I come from. That's where I grew up. That's an everyday run-of-the-mill description.
That just shows that you are immune now to beauty, which is what I've often suspected.
My wife says the same thing. But, but then I say, I'm not. I married you. But yeah, that is personal experience, I guess. So, but coming from where I come from and seeing this phrase used a lot, it's an everyday observation. But also, there's a lot to like in the rest of the song. And obviously, like you, I like the "So Let Me Feel My Children's Heart" and all that that section. That is gorgeous. Very nice. I like it a lot. And the last thing I'm going to say or make a special deal of, like yourself, I don't want to sit through all night, a word about the singing. I actually have an issue with the female backing vocals.
Well, first of all, wait a minute. You've got June Miles Kingston, and she's a drummer.
Yes, that's right. But she's also an absolutely splendid singer. Not a lot of people know this. But we were looking for someone to sing some female backing vocals. And it was Robin Miller, actually, that recommended her, because he'd worked with her.
He's the producer.
Yeah, with Everything But the Girl. She'd sung with them a couple of times. And came in, and her voice matched up to mine perfectly, and it was brilliant. She's possibly going to be doing some live work with us in the future.
There's no personality, no emotion, no nothing. I feel they're just singing along, hitting each note perfectly. It's technically sound, but they don't add any emotion or personal touch, so it lets the song down. And especially after the powerhouse performance of Kate Bush earlier in the album, this is phoned in by comparison. And it's not that I expect everybody to be of Kate's caliber, but at least try and give it your all. And part of, you know, this is ranked against Stewart's performance vocally, and he sings wonderfully in this song. And I have to say, I have to really give him credit on this song. His vocals are really good on Ailidan. And despite everything I've said, his performance on this song vocal-wise might well be his best vocal performance on this album and possibly one of the better ones of his career. Mm. It really, really hits it. He really sounds emotional and such a strong delivery. So
that's, yeah, you can tell he's feeling those lyrics when he's singing it.
Yeah, really. So so that pulls the song definitely towards the positive end for me. So it's a shame that the female backing vocals don't live up to Stewart's set bar for this song, so to speak.
I kind of look at those background vocals as just a really nice, subtle shade in the painting. I mean, I don't think that song calls for something like Kate Bush.
Definitely not, but it needs to have emotion.
I do feel it. I feel the emotion there. I mean, I think Stewart being the central, voice of that song, I think in a sense there's almost no room for anything else other than shading in that song, and to me that female vocal, there's something about it that just blends really nicely with his song to the point of I'm almost not even aware of it sometimes, which
yeah,
I think,
but that is fine, and I don't want really anything else, but it's I could have pulled out examples from various pieces of music where I think the subtle background drips with emotion and not just technically hits the notes and has the right volume and those things. So there's something there that doesn't click. And the same singer is on Remembrance Day, so we'll talk about that later, but she does a better job there. Definitely.
Yeah, we'll have to agree to disagree on that, because I definitely hear emotion in her voice, but I like her on there. But I think you've taken the lyrics, at least from my perspective, in the wrong way. I mean, when I listen to this song, I don't think bliss. I don't think, oh, everything's perfect. To me, it's a sad, it's almost a sad, melancholy song. It's kind of like a longing type of song. And for me, when I hear these words, they almost, they're so beautiful that they almost, how should I put this? They almost are a reflection of how, you know, crappy the real world can be. That's what I'm thinking. It's like the real world can be such a brutal, awful place, and this is something that we're longing for. But in that longing, it almost makes the reality of the world that we do live in even more a little bit in your face. So when I hear this song, I don't for even a second think of it as being sugary sweet or everything's great or anything like that. To me, it makes me just feel. It just gives me a real melancholy feel. Like I say, it makes me tear up quite often when I hear this song. And I'm not going to say it's a sad feeling because it's not sad. There's a hopefulness to it. But to me, it's like the best of the positive big country songs. And then I definitely feel a darkness in this song. But I feel someone like struggling to emerge from that darkness. But I still feel the darkness in the song, like references to the wolf that had his fill and all that kind of stuff. I mean, to me, this is like a song of something that has not been realized. It's something that we want, but we all kind of know deep down that we'll never find a place like this.
We definitely see that differently because there's no real reference to this. So that's how each person reads it. He's definitely describing a lot of hope. Like he starts with describing a sort of a dream place, and here is strength for us to find. Here we can make it. I have hope for the future. The children carry the torch, and I will be there. My dream is there. And it doesn't really say where the starting point is, whether it's awful or good or what it is, but there's just hope. And I don't see the darkness. I don't see where the awfulness that he comes from is. I see no references really to it. But, you know, that's the beauty of the song, really, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's not specific references, but that's just the way that I take it. I just feel like those, you know, I and you can hear it in his voice. I mean, when I hear him singing, I don't hear him singing happily. I mean, I hear him singing hopefully, but incredibly emotional, like we talked about. I mean,
yeah, he does that. He's really feeling this place and feeling the hope, and he's touched by it more than sad by it.
Yeah, and clearly, whatever the place is, he's not there, you know, and that's, I think, that emotion comes from wanting to be in a place like that so badly. But yeah, this is we definitely disagree on this song in a lot of respects. But
I can summarize in one line how I feel about it. I like the song a lot, but I always had a feeling that the potential of the song is bigger than the actual performance of it. Mm.
All right, good. Well, to me, the potential is realized here, with the one exception that I spoke about earlier with the drumming. The last thing I'll say about this, getting back to the live performances of these songs, this is one of those songs that I think a lot of us, certainly I did, I know there were others, who used to always dream about hearing this song live. Like, man, why can't they ever play I Lead On? Finally, they played it on the Why the Long Face tour with that Brighton Rock CD that came out. I was so excited to hear I Lead On live, and they did a really good job of it. I like the version that they did.
Yeah,
it was a little fast maybe, but maybe that works better live. Yeah. But the one thing about it that drove me crazy, and I know it bothered other people too, and I still to this day can't figure out why this happened. But one of my favorite lines in the song, Stewart says. Oh, wipe our eyes of misty years, Y-E-A-R-S, which to me is a...
Yeah,
a really nice poetic line. And then, for some reason, live, every time, he says...
And wipe our eyes of misty tears, see the future through.
Misty tears.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Which is such a pedestrian line that totally destroys how beautiful that other line was.
Yeah, so the song sucks now.
It does, definitely does not suck, but it's marred significantly. Mm. Because I just don't get why, I don't understand why he would change that. Did he really think that it was tears? Did he think that tears was actually better, which I really would find hard to believe. So, you know, who knows what the situation was. Maybe that would be a good question for Bruce or someone.
We have to listen to other recordings from that tour and see if it was just a mistake that night or if he actually repeated it.
I've heard it on subsequent performances of that song. I know that I have.
Then so, he probably thought that was it.
That's surprising to me. But, you know, I guess it's, maybe it shouldn't be, because I remember asking him once about the song Can You Feel the Winter, and he didn't even remember that he recorded that song.
Right. So obviously this ranks very high for you. Is it number one?
Yes.
Yeah.
I laid on as number one. As
stupid
I said,
question of the day.
Well, there is another one that rivals this, and I really, really went back and forth on it, because there's another one that I love almost as much, but I had to go with I Lead On, so that, yeah, number one. Mm.
And I rank it as number six.
Freaking crazy.
Yeah, that's how I felt when you ranked the Seer number six. That was my number one.
What was the Seer? Oh, yeah, that's right. It was number one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, how interesting. That's very interesting, actually.
Yeah, isn't it? And now we come to one great thing, and allegedly one great thing. Before I get into the song, I will take a step back and look at the Seer as a whole. This is really the first Big Country album with what I would call lightweight material on it. There are songs that either have lightweight subject matter, lightweight lyrics, and definitely a more pop-oriented musical approach. And one great thing, to be honest, is one of the main culprits of all of this. It's a pop song. It's lightweight. And I'm not slagging lightweight. I don't want to slag the song because of what it is. But I find that I could slam it a bit for what it isn't. And primarily, I feel this song isn't made for Big Country fans. I feel it very strongly as a constructed pop song, where the subject matter is lightweight, it's easily digestible, it's made for mass consumption, which means that by definition, it's seeking an audience outside of the core Big Country fans. And this is problematic on some level. Not that there's anything wrong with trying to expand your fan base, but be careful not to alienate your existing fans. And I will not say they went that far here, but in hindsight, I quite honestly and very strongly see songs like One Great Thing as a natural step towards peace in our time.
Yeah.
And coming from me, that is not a compliment. I strongly dislike what Peace in Our Time represents in the Big Country catalog. And although the Seer definitely isn't on Peace in Our Time's level at all, there is still the overall issue that any album that points the way towards something like Peace in Our Time really starts going in the wrong direction, for me at least. It may not be that songs like One Great Thing are so horrible in themselves. I may retract that later, but it does represent something negative. It signals a move away from songs about pain and truth and things that matter towards something else entirely. And even though One Great Thing has all the Big Country trademarks in it, and as likable as those are, things are, again, way too sugar-coated. And especially coming off an album like Steel Town, which to my ears is one of the very best albums in the history of mankind. And then we go from that to this. They come back with singles like Look Away and One Great Thing. So this is just to provide some context here and looking at the bigger picture. If the fourth album hadn't been Peace in Our Time, but the REL tapes or Steel Town Part 2, maybe it would have been a lot more forgiving to the more lightweight moments on the Seer, as they would have been more like fun experiments instead of the start of something that would not just be continued, but really developed to the more extreme on the next album especially. And thus the start of a direction which which seriously detracted from the strengths of the band and driving away a lot of their existing fans. And I really regard this as a misfire. It all started on the Seer with songs just like this one. So if I try to judge this song merely on its own merits, for starters, it's clearly not very deep. It is lightweight, and even though we all want peace, we all seen too much fighting, but we also seen hundreds of songs wanting peace that offer no deep thought on the subject matter beyond just wanting peace and being sick and tired of being sick and tired. And while I agree wholeheartedly with the subject matter, the song still manages to give me literally nothing. It's such a huge letdown when we know what the band was capable of. Right. So what we basically have here is a rallying cry, almost like in the same vein as John Lennon's Give Peace a Chance. It's the same vein, but that song doesn't say much more than the title itself either. It's just a slogan. You see it on the banner in a protest march. The difference being that Give Peace a Chance is a much better slogan than One Great Thing.
And the thing that made Stewart's anti-war messages so much more effective in the past was that he told personal stories like Where the Rose is Sown or Come Back to Me, you know, personal tales that you can really empathize with and feel real senses of emotion and the loss and the pain and et cetera, et cetera. But that being said, I don't have a problem with them trying to do something like One Great Thing in the sense of them trying to do something a little bit lighter. I don't think everything, you know, has to be so depressing and down. And that's fine that they want to choose, you know, try to do a more upbeat song. And it certainly sounds like Big Country. I mean, it's got all of the you know, the bagpipe guitar sounds. It's got Big Country type chord progressions, but it's Big Country by numbers, basically. And I think it's Big Country by numbers, you know, it's more than any other song on this album. This was the first Big Country song when I heard this that I really started, some little questions started to creep in for me, like, And I remember I had a really good friend at the time who, we became friends through Big Country, which happened so much in my life. But this was years ago, before the internet or anything. We happened to attend the same school, the same college, and we got this album and we were listening to it. And this guy was much more of a musical snob than me. Like, he wouldn't like anything if it became successful. And so Big Country was starting to become fairly successful, and he was already a little bit stepping back a little. But what really set him off was the end of this song. And I have to admit, when I heard the end of this song, I was like, oh, what is that? And I'm talking about that little... When I first heard that, I just thought, what is this, you know? And it seems like that's something that only a complete purist type of person who's maybe overanalyzing the song would fixate on. But it really was something so different for me, and something that I would not have expected to hear in a Big Country song. That one little guitar line, that to me is what I point to when I say this is the beginning of Big Country kind of going in a direction I really didn't want them to go for a few years. And, you know, saying all of that, I do still think there are some really good things about it musically. It's not a song that I hate. It's not a song that I despise. You know, yeah, I mean, it's not something that I go, ugh, I can't stand to listen to this. In fact, in preparing for this podcast, I listened to The Seer a couple of times all the way through, which I hadn't done in a long time, and then I cranked this song up, and I actually kind of enjoyed it. And the chorus, to me, is the weakest part of the song, but...
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the verses, and, you know, I'm not really talking necessarily about lyrics here, I'm talking more about music, but... kind of like Look Away, that the one thing that I do respect about this song is that even though it's a pop song, they really didn't dial down the musicianship in this much at all. I mean, because we've still got great, crazy bass playing from Tony. You know, he's moving all over the fretboard.
It's called polishing a turd.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. But yeah, it's... You know, there is a lot of good stuff in there, and there's a lot of good playing from Mark, and there's also like this cool little dissonant guitar part throughout the verses. It's just like one little note. I've seen the way I've I like that little touch. And I also really like the breakdown section. I got to admit, when everything breaks down in the middle and he's like, I've seen too much of what fighting has done. And then you get the chant in the background, which is a little over the top maybe, but
yes, I like way over the top.
Yeah, I do like it.
No, I don't. I hate it.
But, you know, one thing I think we could both agree on hating when it comes to this song, and we haven't touched on yet, is the fact that this became an advertisement.
One great thing from Big Country, our beatbox guest today. You're laughing during that as well, fellas. What's so funny about that? Is it a while since you've seen that one?
Yeah, it is. It's funny because that's the song which we supplied to a certain company for a beer commercial in Scotland, you know.
I want to talk about that, as a matter of fact. Huey Lewis was in this studio not so long ago, and he wasn't exactly giving out about people who get involved in deals like that, but he was sort of saying that he would certainly never do it for very all the right reasons. So how come you guys got involved in it?
The reason that we got involved in it was quite basically that we needed the money. We were skinned.
Well,
right, it was right in the middle of all our business troubles. We're going to get some dosh, you know?
Yeah.
Because not only do we have to be responsible for ourselves, but there's other people who rely on us for their living as well, you know?
I think it is perfectly fine that they did it. I think it's perfectly fine that they got paid for it. What I don't think is fine is that they made the song to begin with. So I don't blame them for capitalizing on anything they've ever made. But I wish they had capitalized on a better song.
Yeah. Well, I actually asked Bruce about this by email because there was some talk about it on the page. And a lot of people had said that the band actually went back and re-recorded the entire song. Now, I didn't believe that. I thought, why would they re-record the entire song? Why wouldn't they just use the music track and then dub the new lyrics over top of it? I mean, that would seem to make the most sense. So I asked Bruce about that, and sure enough, he confirmed it. They really re-recorded the entire song, and here's what he said. I mean, now it may not have been the entire song. It may just have been, you know, a small arrangement of it for the commercial, but he says, we re-recorded One Great Thing at Castle Sound in Pencaitland, period. The ad company came up with the lyrics, and after the ad was shown, we never played it again. Looking back, it was good money, but Stewart felt he couldn't sing it afterwards. So Stewart, you know, it obviously must have bothered him, I think, too. And since we're talking about these lyrics, and now we have confirmation that the ad company actually wrote these lyrics, I transcribed them on the page, and I got a little correction from someone, and I think we've got the final version now. But it's, if there's one great thing that no one can deny, if there's one great sight in this one great land, let it be the one I know, let me take it in my hand. If there's one great thing that no one can deny, I've seen too much of what others have done. I've heard too much of the songs they have sung. Their words have failed to sway me from what I know is true. For once you taste perfection, then nothing else will do.
I'm just thinking, apart from the last line, what does this have to do with beer?
Yeah, I know. But the last thing I'll say about this song is that they did eventually play it again, and it was on their acoustic tour, which I think happened after the Buffalo Skinners.
We'd like to play a song for you now that we haven't actually played on stage since at least a fortnight. But actually, what I mean really is we haven't played on stage since about 1986, one thinks. So some of you may not even have been born then. I certainly wasn't. 1986, Into the Valley. My God, there's a guy who's got his dates next time. Someone was obviously supplying you with lots of drugs very cheaply. Who's that?
I'm going to tell you,
Hey, I can't help it, man. At least they're back smooth. Go on, this is called, actually, wait, I was going to tell a wee story here. See, you disrupted me there. I was into my stand-up act.
Sorry, mate.
Sorry, I was into my sit-down act. Hey! Oh. You better believe it. Plenty of red meat here. Anyway, about the story. So we stopped playing the song about 1986 because basically we couldn't play it on stage without bursting out laughing because it got made into a beer advert on the telly. The song's called One Great Thing.
So at least they brought it out again, but yeah. So it's number 9 for you.
9 for me.
And it's number 10 for me. Okay, so now we come to Hold the Heart. This is certainly maybe a first for Stuart as far as being a breakup type of song, but I really love this song. I have to admit, and just a little personal story. This song really came to mean a lot to me when, shortly after it came out, I had one of my first breakups, my first big breakups in my life, and I was dumped. I remember sitting there listening to this song quite a bit, you know, and being upset and thinking
all day in your room, playing it over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. And the lyrics really captured that feel so well, you know, especially certain lines that I'll mention here, but, musically, I really like this song quite a bit. It's got a really nice Ebo portion of the song that plays a beautiful melody that works very well, I think. Once again, we've got the clean guitars that are so prevalent in this album. I think there's some really interesting guitar parts here. But to me, the star of this song is definitely the lyrics. I think whereas One Great Thing is one of Stuart's weakest lyrics and really kind of bland and just, you know, too big and not personal enough, this song to me is just the opposite. I think this is one of his best lyrical efforts in his entire catalog. I mean, I don't think I've ever, I'm sure I probably have heard something that's comparable or maybe even exceeds this, but I can't think of it right now as far as a set of lyrics that captures so beautifully the feeling of, you know, love lost. And there are just so many incredible lines in here that are just so intensely personal and beautiful. And you know, some of the ones that really stand out to me, this one especially, when he says, "I would wait 100 years to hear you say my name the way you did before he came, the way you will again." At the time when that pain happens to you or when that hurt happens to you, and you feel so intensely emotional. I mean, lines like that are exactly sum up how you feel. And then there's just some other beautiful lines that just to this day give me chills not because they necessarily apply to me like some of the other lines did, but just because they are such a nice part of this story that he's telling. And one of those to me is, I mean, what a great poetic way to describe, you know, the love that's been lost here. And then another line to me that really gets back to that abstract lyric writing that I love about Stuart's writing, and my favorite way that he writes. And this line, I think I don't 100% understand exactly what he's saying here, but yet it's one of those lines that's just so poetic and beautiful that I get it. I understand it on a deeper level. And that is, but there's one huge problem with this, and it's the big flaw of the song. And it's something that I think was an issue with a lot of Stewart's writing and singles, and it's just way too long. I mean, the song is just way too long, and it's almost 6 minutes long. It's almost exactly 6 minutes. It may even be the longest song on the album. I'm not sure, but when you think of long epics on this album, you think of The Sailor, you think of I Lead On, you think of something else. You don't think Hold the Heart, and yet Hold the Heart is, as I believe, the longest song on the album. So, you know, at 6 minutes, you've got a song that is meant to be a single, and that's just crazy.
And if you look at Through a Big Country, which may be a reflection of how the single flopped, this song wasn't on it. And this is the only song released as a single thus far in their career, up to Through a Big Country, that wasn't included on Through a Big Country. So that's fairly interesting. I said it last time, if The Teacher could be a single, The Seer could be a single. And the same applies here. If Hold the Heart with its length could be a single, then The Seer with its shorter length could be a single. So I'm going to chime in about how that song should have been a single, if only because of the Kate Bush connection. But that's neither here nor there right now. And Hold the Heart was clearly not a single song with its 6 minutes monumentalness.
So maybe this shouldn't have been a single at all and just should have stood on its own. But
I think in hindsight, there's no defending this choice. The problem being in hindsight, right? As a ballad, it might have been something that I thought, okay, not my favorite song on the album, but maybe I still think we should give it a shot. But this, to me, is the second ballad on the album, with I Lead On being the first. And I had some criticisms there on how sugar sweet it was on I Lead On, that Ebo intro. On this one, it works better for me. The Ebo sells the song a bit. And the song itself is fairly good. The lyrics are well thought out, and like you said, you know, I don't know if there's any examples left for me to choose, but they really do paint the picture of unrequited love and denial about this, which is what really makes this such a standout. It's all about denial. Yeah. This is like a song, not a love song, not a dump song, but a denial song. Like you'll be back, you know. I know,
right?
And really, that bridge is one of my favorite sections. Like, I know the way that you left me was only to test me, and I was vain. But right. I will be strong, and I will be warm, and no one will come near me until you'll hear me just once again. So, yeah. That little stanza there
so great.
Encapsulates the entire song. It captures everything. That's what it's about. So it might have taken years before I actually got into the song enough to understand it. To me, it was a boring love song when I first heard it. And I, as a teen, I wasn't interested in love songs. I wasn't interested in those kind of love songs.
Well, you didn't even
and
discover
I thought
the,
it was too long.
You didn't even discover the emotion of love until you were like in your 30s, is right? That's what I remember. Hearing.
You're cutting that one out. That's what you call sabotage, my friend. It really is a song about unrequited love and denial. So, and it's fairly brilliantly done.
Yeah.
There's no denying it. Those lyrics are fantastic. But the problem remains the song length. Even though I have warmed considerably to the song over the years, it is too long. It goes on far too long.
Yeah.
And 6 minutes, 7 seconds to be precise. That's,
wow.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
That's crazy.
Especially the long instrumental sections drag out a bit.
Yeah.
There are fairly long sections between each verse and between each verse that they wouldn't have had any difficulty shortening it quite a bit.
I was going to say, those instrumental interludes where they basically play the same as what's played in the opening, those could have definitely been removed, and that could have helped a lot.
Yeah. What makes it okay is that the Ebo is fairly nicely played over those sections, even though it's the same thing over and over and over and over again. And especially when they play the song live, they replace the Ebo with some more simple guitar picking, just like the Teacher, I think, they replaced some guitar parts with just some picking.
Yeah, he's playing it like on the lower strings, and it's got that Western feel again to it.
This is where we belong, Slushy Onion. Yeah.
I wonder why they did that, though. Now that I think about it more, I mean, you would think that Bruce could have played the Evo part and Stewart could have played the chords, and maybe it was just too much of a hassle. I often got the feeling that they thought whipping out the Evo live became just too much of a hassle for them. Especially as the tours wore on, because even later, I remember on King of Emotion, early when they used to play King of Emotion, they would bring out the Evo for that very brief Evo part, and then as they got on, they were just like, forget it, I'm just playing this regularly.
No one will notice.
Well, as someone who has played an Evo on stage, I will have to say that it is kind of strange when you play it and you're finished, you don't know where to put it. It's like, where do I put it now? I've got to keep playing. You just kind of drop it on the floor. So yeah, maybe that was part of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we're digressing.
Yeah. And like I mentioned already, this is the only song that they released as a single in the 80s that wasn't included on Through a Big Country.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, so that is, and obviously it's a reflection on how bad the single flopped. It wasn't a success, it wasn't a hit, and it still was too long. But interestingly, and this yet again brings me back to my previous point, instead of including Hold the Heart on Through a Big Country, they included The Seer, which wasn't a single.
Very interesting.
And I've always said it should have been a single, but it was included on Through a Big Country in the place of an actual single.
Wow.
So again, raises the point I made, correct choice of songs for singles. And I even think a full-length version of The Seer would have done much better than Hold the Heart. So
you're probably right, at least with the KJ connection.
I'm pretty clear in my opinion of this. Hold the Heart, much like The Teacher, was the wrong choice for a single. Should never have been it. So obviously I'm saying this with the benefit of hindsight, but I know if they had pushed for The Seer instead with the Kate Bush name, it would have beat number 55.
Okay, so Hold the Heart, I rank it right below The Seer at number 7.
I knew it. So I rank it as number 7 too.
You know, it's funny how Svein and I criticize a song for being too long, and we ended up talking about it for about 20 minutes. So we're going to have to stop things here for part 2 of our Seer trilogy. We'll be back next time with episode 16, which will be part 3, the third and final part of the trilogy. And we will continue to talk about the songs we haven't gotten to yet, and we'll offer our final thoughts on the album. So I hope you enjoy it. And thanks so much again, everyone, for your feedback. It really means a lot. We really appreciate it. You can give us that feedback at bigcountrypodcast@gmail.com. You can go to our Facebook page, The Great Divide Podcast. You can visit us on iTunes, leave some comments there. Just search for The Great Divide Big Country Podcast under podcasts on iTunes. And check my music out, too. I got to give that plug, ReverbNation/Thomas Kercheval. If you want to hear some of my original music, I would appreciate your listening and commenting. And that's about it. We will see you guys next time, and we're looking forward to it. Hopefully you've enjoyed this series and can't wait to deliver the last one. So we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.